Hey, so it's been a while, One of those things you like need to record the podcast, but I just don't feel like it. I figured I better get on it because the whole way that this one's set up, the longer I leave it, the more things that I need to get through. So I've got a massive list of things here. I went through like 2 weeks ago and highlighted everything to get it ready. And then I just didn't. I was like, I'll highlight everything, be all good to go tomorrow, and then 2 weeks later, I'm actually recording the episode. So let's get into it. This first article that I've got here is from Bleeding Cool. I think I've mentioned this before, but you may be wondering, why do I pull a bunch of stuff from Bleeding Cool? Well, they just have some great headlines sometimes. They've got this sense of humor that you wouldn't expect even in a pop culture and comics style publication. And usually I wouldn't probably talk about wrestling too much on this, but I just love this headline. Why is WWE pulling a reverse poochie on Roman Reigns? This is, of course, referring to the wrestler that Vince is trying to force up in the listing and in the crowd's adulations, Roman Reigns. And that famous episode of The Simpsons where Homer became the voice of the new character, Poochie. As it says here, that the position on Roman Reigns has been akin to one, Roman needs to be louder, angrier, and have access to a time machine. Two, whenever Roman's not on screen, all the other characters should be asking, where's Roman? But this, of course, is relating to that he did not make an appearance at WrestleMania 31. The speculations, wait, WrestleMania 31. No, this was a tweet about WrestleMania 31. He didn't make an appearance at WrestleMania 36. So, if you're going to write that in the WrestleMania house style, that'll be WrestleMania XXX6, because they can only do Roman numerals up to so many. Says here, Reigns declined to participate in WrestleMania 36 due to concerns over safety amidst the coronavirus pandemic. As a leukemia survivor, you may not have known that about him, Reigns is an elevated risk to the virus, so it makes sense that he would want to obey quarantine rules. Seems like Vince didn't like that very much, because now no one's allowed to talk about him. This is the Poochie analogy. And I think this extends beyond the WWE universe, which, on a flip side, has not made any actual mention of the coronavirus yet. So if you want an escape from everything that's going on, go watch wrestling because they just don't talk about it. But it seems like because Roman Reigns doesn't want to appear at a major event at this essential service because he is immunocompromised, they're not talking about him either. Here was another quick article I saw that was quite interesting. This was the original one from Variety. Tommy Wiseau ordered to pay $700,000 to the Room documentary makers. And so essentially what this is around the time that the Disaster Artist movie was coming out, there was a documentary about Wiseau and the Room that was meant to be released roughly at the same time. And they pried into those regular questions that you ask about Tommy Wiseau, such as how old is he and where did he come from and how did he get his money? Wiseau didn't appreciate these questions into his personal life and constantly delayed the documentary filmmakers to prevent the film from ever being released. And apparently it's only coming out around now. So this documentary titled Room Full of Spoons, well, planned to release the project in 2017 to capitalize on Sony Pictures' debut of Disaster Artist. But Wiseau filed suit and obtained an injunction in Toronto, alleging that the documentary violated his copyright by using clips from The Room and invaded his privacy. So this turned out to be unfair, and that they're allowed to use clips from The Room since the documentary is about The Room, and he has to pay $700,000, which no one actually knows, but that seems like a bit of a pittance to Wiseau, and the documentary can finally come out. Interesting, all very interesting. Strange man, strange, strange man. Here's one from the ABC. Coronavirus hit Ruby Princess cruise ship, crew partied after passengers disembarked in Sydney. This is one of those things, the headline makes it look bad. Everything to do with this whole Ruby Princess fiasco does not make anyone involved look good. And this doesn't help either. And as I've got highlighted here, Sydney turned on a spectacular afternoon, and while the cruise had been cut short because international borders were closing, the impression among some crew members was that the ship was free of COVID-19 after New South Wales Health allowed the nearly 2,700 passengers to disembark that morning. And so what happened from here is that they thought they were all clear, and so usually that big boarding party they'd have for all the passengers, they still plan to have that, but with everything going on, there were no passengers, so they had the boarding party for themselves. It sounds bad on the surface, but that's sort of what it was. They were planning to have a party anyway. Usually it's meant to be for passengers, so this time they made it for the crew. Let me tell you, there's a picture here of this guy, a New Zealander, called Chris Harris, who plays trumpet in the ship's band. And if I had to imagine a New Zealand trumpet player, this is exactly what this guy would look like. But he looks like he's approaching 40, but this photo of him here still looks like a high school prom photo. There in his tux with his very tiny trumpet. As he's quoted here, "When we left on March 19th, as far as we were aware, we were a healthy ship. The sail away party would normally be reserved for passengers, but with the ship free of guests, the crew were treated to a special event. Another crew member at the party was Byron Safandi, our fitness instructor, who boarded the ship in January. A party without passengers, it never happens," Mr. Safandi said. "Sorry. When we normally sail away, there's a dance and music. There's a singer. There's some cocktails going on, just welcoming the guests. And that was for us." So that's what it was. They were just making most of the party that was not going to happen otherwise. Everything was a mess, but let's not get too angry at the crew over this one. Here's one that I've pulled from The Verge. "Tinder will launch in-app video chats later this year." Now, I don't know about you, but I can't see any way this could possibly go wrong. This seems like the exact sort of feature that Tinder is crying out for, and I'm sure for all the people who are forced to use that app, that this will make their experience much better. As it says here in the article, "Tinder is going to launch its own in-app one-on-one video chats later this year. Match Group, the brand's parent company, announced the feature in its earnings release today. It says it's seen an uptick in the average Tinder swipes each day and said they reached all-time highs. Women users under the age of 30 increased their daily average swipes by 37%. I wonder why that is. Well, that should be rolled out by now, so I'd love to get some feedback from people. Now, if you just hold on, I'm quickly going to pause the podcast before moving on to the next article because my kettle is currently whistling. And I'm back. Poured myself a cup of tea, sprayed my nose so I can talk a bit more effectively, and I even put some drops in my ears because I am at war with my bodily fluids. They just keep coming out in the areas and quantities that I don't want them to, and I got to put more things into my body to stop things from coming out of it. All right, next article here from the Sydney Morning Herald. JB Hi-Fi sales jump in pandemic thanks to work at home and leisure boom. If you've tried to buy a USB-C hub for your laptop recently, just based on that alone, you'd realize that something's going on. As the article states, JB Hi-Fi told investors on Wednesday, comparable sales at its Australian stores for the 3 months through March climbed 11.3%, one of its highest ever comparable growth rates for a single quarter. Because, of course, with everything going on, you're working from home, you realize that you actually need a decent keyboard, that you can't just use that piece of shit one that's part of your MacBook anymore, that trackpads are fucking pieces of shit, and so you actually need a mouse, that you want to be able to plug your laptop into an external monitor, but then you realize just how fucking shit HDMI cables are. Like, great in theory, but they're just this big, chunky shape that only plugs in one way, and it's so hard to get it in and out. So if your laptop has either multiple USB-C ports or just the one, you go out, you get a hub, put everything into that, and then you only need to plug one thing into your laptop that's nice and small, fits both ways, and handles everything. So it just makes things so much easier. And then the rest of this article just seems to go on about the general capitalism involved with a publicly traded company. So not much more needs to be said on that. Here's one. This one was going around a lot of places, but I've pulled this from the newdaily.com.au. Tom Cruise to film aboard International Space Station. Yep, old mate is just not stopping. Sure, he does his own stunts, but this is something else, as the article states. Cruise is partnering with NASA to shoot a movie, at least in part, aboard the International Space Station, NASA has confirmed, the first narrative feature to be shot in space. This just seems like the age of CGI and everything, that space is like quite literally the final frontier in terms of actual spectacle. That, you know, we don't give a shit about watching anything in movies anymore because there's no longer a question of how did they do that. That we know that everything was just 1,000 nerds at 1,000 computers for 1,000 hours. But at least this, you watch it, and it's going to feel real. You know what you're seeing on screen is going to be real. But the main reason that I read into this is that Deadline reported it will not be an installment of the Mission Impossible franchise. So sorry, Chris McQuarrie, but I guess you won't be going for a free ride up into space with old mate. Now, here's another part of this article that I highlighted. It's unclear how Cruise will pull off this feat, but even at 57, he's insisted on doing his own stunts. That's right, 57. Tom Cruise is 57. I am half his age, and he looks better now than I ever have. So I just wanted to drop that in. Here's another article from the Australian arm of Kotaku. I like to mention that because Kotaku's got a bit of a bad reputation, which it has thusly earned, but the Australian journalists there are actually pretty decent. It says, Australian MP recommends parents stay sane with Animal Crossing. Now, I looked into this. It's Tim Watts, Labor's Shadow Assistant Minister for Communications and Cybersecurity. He posted a short video about how to stay cyber safe and sane during the coronavirus pandemic. To be honest, I didn't do any research into his character, but he doesn't seem like any particular crazy person whose message I should not be amplifying on this podcast with an audience of less than zero. Now, it extends into a couple of just regular things that are actually quite good points, saying that you should be secure by using long passwords, two-factor authentication, and give your kids a Nintendo Switch with Animal Crossing on it so that they leave you the fuck alone and you can actually get work done. Which, I mean, there's honestly no real politics in that. That's just good advice. Here's another one from this bnt.com.au, that one that I can never pronounce. Star Wars fans outraged by absolutely bonkers Trump Star Wars ad. Oh, man, I got to tell you, I watched this thing, and this is fucking bad. Is this the best the boomers can come up with? I don't understand how they're winning. Let me describe this ad to you as it's listed here in the article. Joe Biden's face is superimposed onto the evil character of Emperor Palpatine. Okay, so that's Joe Biden is Emperor Palpatine in this parable, who orders a stormtrooper with a CNN logo placed on its forehead to kill Yoda, who was played by Trump in the video. In this video, Trump is Yoda. This is just getting the Order 66 scene and the part where all the clone troopers turn their weapons on Yoda and he picks up on it and kills them all. But it's saying that Joe Biden is the evil shadowy emperor who is ordering the clone troopers to turn on their commanders, and Trump is the wise old but misguided fucking Jedi master who gives a shit about all this, who overcomes them. And this is like honestly bad. Like the tracking in it is terrible. They only use a few images for everyone's face. That it feels like it's one of those things that I believe it's Chapo was talking about. A lot of these ads are either made by like 60-year-olds or like 13-year-olds. That's the level of quality and competency that we're working with. And to be honest, you'd almost err towards 60-year-olds, because I'm sure 13-year-olds have a better grasp of, like, you know, Final Cut and Photoshop. Here's another one from The Guardian. This is a fantastic fucking headline here. Room with a poo. The tiny Sydney apartment for rent with a toilet in the kitchen. This is one of those semi-viral tweets that people feel necessary to spin 300 words out of. But as it says here, a studio apartment in the popular inner-city suburb of Surry Hills, listed for $380 per week with 2 weeks free rent, quickly gained attention on Twitter thanks to its unique space-saving layout. The bathroom, featuring a toilet and a shower, is located in the kitchen, separated only by two glass walls. And this really needs to be seen. But on top of that, only one of the glass walls is frosted, which is the one facing the kitchen. That there seems to be a lounge next to the toilet area against the other glass wall, the one where you can see the toilet most directly, and it is not frosted. So this spun out of a viral tweet from one Joan Westenberg, and of course it necessitated a bunch of responses, which have to be embedded in the article to pad it out. And the article goes on to say, the glass walls let in the light and anyone else who may be in the apartment. Only one of the glass walls is partly frosted, meaning that your business becomes everybody else's business. So then there's a lot of responses, and the article doesn't really go into how that this act of gentrification and the excessive rents that people expect others to pay for unreasonable living conditions does not get examined. And it's all just taken for as read, and that this is inevitable and this is how things are. Okay, another one from Sydney Morning Herald, and I'll gloss over this one quickly. China hid coronavirus severity to hoard supplies, report. Okay, that's a report. That's the headline is just stating what the report thinks. And so I just want to bring this up because this is according to a four-page Department of Homeland Security report dated May 1st. So this is with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo saying that China was responsible for the spread of the disease and must be held accountable. This is just a four-page report saying this, and I believe what I feel like is the strategy here is that the whole thing, you can almost say anything as long as you save it as a PDF with the right letterhead, and then people will just report on it as news. So I just wanted to bring this up because it's coming out of official Department of Homeland Security stationery doesn't necessarily mean that it's the case. I feel like sometimes these things are overstated. And here we go. This ties into it again from SBS. Mike Pompeo says enormous evidence coronavirus originated in Chinese lab. Again, he's just said this. It's been quite unsubstantiated. This is more just a case of when something comes out on the news being said by someone official, that even if it's true or not, people have to report on it. Man, this is where I saw this photo. This is a picture of a protester with his rifle at the state capitol in Michigan. You should see this fucking gun this guy has. It's like, it looks like, what is it, like an FN 2000? Whatever it is, it looks expensive as fuck. It's got the bullpup design. It's got a fucking red dot sight on it. Like, this looks like the last thing that you would unlock in a fucking modern warfare game. This isn't someone who's struggling for work and just wants to go back to, you know, stacking the shelves or whatever stories he works in so that he can afford to pay the rent. This is a guy who just wants to go shopping. Shit's fucked. Here's another one from ABC. Flight Centre stops charging cancellation fees for trips affected by coronavirus after pressure from ACCC. But as you might know, that Flight Centre is getting absolutely fucked in the ass by this whole virus. And that, as the key points here state, Flight Centre will no longer charge customers $300 per person for cancellation fees. The ACCC welcomed the move, which followed weeks of pressure on the company. Flight Centre says the change to fees will be applied retrospectively. So this is even after you book flights It says here the 13th of March that if you booked them after that date and then had to cancel, that they weren't going to honour the cancellation and sting you for it. So now they've finally relented on that, and they're not going to be charging people for cancelling flights that they're legally not allowed to take. That even before all this stuff happened, that I'm happy with anything that sees the end of Flight Centre, because I tried to get a job there, made it to the group interview stage, and when the guy called me to tell me I was unsuccessful, that his feedback was that maybe I should go work in another retail environment and build up experience there before applying for Flight Centre again. And I was like, yeah, I'm really going to angle my fucking career to be able to work at a Flight Centre. That, like, who do these fucking people think they are? And then they're trying to charge people in a pandemic for cancelling their flights. But if Flight Centre dies as a fucking result of this pandemic, I am fine with it. All right, next article. This one's from Mashable. The complete guide to cleaning your headphones during the pandemic. Now, I was looking through this, and this is really like, I don't know who this article's targeted at. This seems to almost be for people who have no fucking idea about their headphones. That, honestly, if you're the sort of person that doesn't really care about your headphones or music or audio quality, that you're probably not going to clean them. Because it explains the difference between earbuds, over-ear, and on-ear headphones. Like, this is rudimentary shit. What I'm thinking I'd almost do instead is just seeing this come up reminded me of an article I saw from the Sound Guys about how to clean your earbuds. And that one was really informative. I used it on my Sony FlexPods and made a big difference. So usually I just, in the show notes, add links to everything I talked about. Instead of this one, I will link to that guide. Here's another one. This I just saw from Bleeding Cool again, but quite useful. Manticore Games launches free game design course, Core Academy. Now, I don't exactly know which games Manticore has worked on, but this is just interesting because if you're sitting around with nothing to do, how about you sign up for this game-making course and then you can feel guilty about never visiting again? But it's actually of value, less so now, because it's all based around Unreal Engine 4. Of course, Unreal Engine 5 just got announced, making everything in this, you know, soon to be irrelevant. But from what I understand, there's probably a lot of similarities between the two. So brush up on Unreal Engine 4 now, so when the 5 dev kit comes out, which you can all just access through the Epic Games launcher, unless you have a problem with that, that you can learn how to make games, and then you can become the next Tim Sweeney, or who's another one, John Carmack, you know, Hideo Kojima, all them ones. Give a look. Here's another one, Bleeding Cool again. But this is more just another headline. I fucking love this headline. Boris Johnson names his 6th or 7th child Wilfred. Just how great is that? That's a fucking great headline. The article goes on to mention here, Prime Minister of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. It's unusual for the Wikipedia page of the leader of a G7 country to be unsure how many children they have. But that is the case with Boris Johnson, Prime Minister of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. It previously said 6 or 7. It now says at least 6. How great is that? That's the leader of the UK, everyone. He has at least 6 children. And of course, his name is Wilfred. There's an earlier Trash Future episode where they go into the fact that his name will be Willie Johnson. This article takes a bit of a different tact, focusing primarily on comics. It keeps in that lane. This goes on to talk about, however, if you're British and of a certain age, close to that of Boris Johnson, with a working knowledge of the Beano, it means something very different. The Beano is a weekly comic anthology that's been running since 1938 and has published over 4,000 issues and is very much a traditional part of British life. The Bash Street Kids were created by Leo Baxendale in 1954, inspired by the view from publisher D.C. Thompson & Co. office windows overlooking the High School of Dundee playground, and has been running in the comic book ever since. Frozen in the ear when it began, it portrays Class 2B of the Bash Street School in Beano Town, where the teacher and headmaster wear mortarboards and gowns and the students sit at wood desks with inkwells. They're taught by a stereotypical teacher whose wife is Mrs. Teacher, and the strip generally consists of the 10 children getting the worst possible trouble, including a certain Wilfred. And then it's got a picture of one Wilfred here. It was a necklace bald chap who his face up to his nose is obscured by the sweater that he is tucked into. And so this goes on to talk about Wilfred from the, Bash Street Kids. And that this comic strip could have been potential inspiration, which, Bleeding Cool, I'm sure it was. Anyway, it's just an interesting bit of comic history there. Any chance to slot some of that in, I suppose. All the best to Willie Johnson. Here's another one from the New Daily. Video game punters charge with match-fixing scam. Now, this is of news because this is the first time anyone in Australia has been charged with match-fixing in esports. It's quite a bit of an interesting read. Detectives from the Victoria Police Sporting Integrity Intelligence Unit, what a fucking name, charged the men last week with serious offences subject to maximum penalties of 10 years imprisonment. I'm sure they'll get that. The ABC revealed last year the police suspected matches in semi-professional esports league had been thrown, and that associates of the team had been told to bet on them. And this is just quite interesting. I don't believe it states what games they were playing, but this is just an interesting reading. A 20-year-old man from Mill Park in Melbourne's outer north has been charged with two counts of engaging in conduct that corrupts or would corrupt a betting outcome. Two counts of using corrupt conduct information for betting purposes and possessing cannabis. I'm sure they just tacked that last one on the end. Two other 20-year-old men from Mill Park and another 20-year-old man from nearby suburb of South Morangle have been charged with three counts of using corrupt conduct information for betting purposes. A 27-year-old man from Sale in Victoria's East has been charged with five counts of using corrupt conduct information for betting purposes. So, there has been a match-fixing esports ring going on in northern Melbourne this whole time, and no one knew about it. This is the first time it's ever happened, and hey, I can tell them fellas right now in the police force, this won't be the last. That they better be keeping an eye on CSGO, because those skins don't buy themselves. Here's another one here from The Age. This is a throwback article. From the archives, 1956, Melbourne booksellers charged over Lady Chatterley. Yeah, so if you didn't know, it's called The Trial of Lady Chatterley. Returned to its original name, Lady Chatterley's Lover, which is these days a boring as fuck book, which I know because I read it, all about a woman who marries a cripple and then has an affair with the gardener. It's kind of interesting, and I feel like it's a little bit more progressive than a lot of the young adult stuff that comes out these days, even though it's written 100 years ago. But it's just interesting reading this because all the controversy of the book, because it actually had swear words in it and depicted sex, meant it was banned for the longest time, and it was illegal to sell. You were only allowed to start selling it in the UK in the 60s, probably after this case here in 1965 here in Australia. It was extremely controversial, and that law was only overturned when it pretty much wouldn't have mattered anymore. And it's just interesting reading this, the way that these laws are set up. Subsection 1 of Section 3 of the Act reads in part, "It shall not be lawful to print or publish or cause or procure to be printed or published in relation to any judicial proceedings, any incident matter or any incident medical, surgical or psychological details, matter or details, publication of which would be calculated to injure public morals." I wonder who decides that. And then subsection 2 of section 3 of the Act reads, "It shall not be lawful to sell, distribute, or give away, or cause, or procure, to be sold, distributed, or given away, or to have in possession, sell, distribution, or giving away any newspaper or document, whether printed or published in Victoria or elsewhere, containing or purporting to contain any matter or details, particulars which would, if the newspaper or document were printed or published in Victoria, to be a contravention of the provisions of the section." But then, the Act provides penalties of a corporation, if not more than £1,000, because of when it happened, and if any other person not more than £500, or to imprisonment for not more than 4 months, or both. And then it has a defence section here, which is an interesting little subheading, where you hear from the defendant's side of the case. Let's see. It says, in Sydney last night, the distributor of the trial, Lady Chatterley, Mr. A. Shepherd, said a meeting of the Council for Civil Liberties would be held tonight to discuss plans for defending the book. He and the publisher, Mr. L. Fink, would go to Melbourne within the next week to coordinate plans for the Freedom to Read Committee. So I don't know if this was actually the thing that maybe overturned it here, but it was a big deal, and it was a bit of a weird one. Here's an article, one conversation one. I haven't highlighted anything I want to sign. I don't want to do it, so I'm going to skip that one. Here's another one. I'll just try to breeze over this quickly. From the conversation, no wonder isolation's so tiring. All those extra time decisions are taxing our brains. So this is all about how being locked down at home, it should be easy, right? But there's so many more things that you have to think about. Is it safe to nip out for milk? Should I download the COVID Safe app? Is it okay to wear my pajamas in a Zoom meeting? But all these small things, I suppose, cause a bit of option paralysis, and just doing anything feels overwhelming. I can tell you that. I mean, you're sitting around at home all day, it feels like there's nothing to do, but there's also things that you kind of need to do, but you don't want to do anything. And there's actual research here that backs all this up. It says, more and more decisions take their toll. When tasks become more taxing, decision-making can start to deteriorate. Another study, Swiss researchers used the monitoring task to zone the impact of cognitive load on risky choices. They asked participants to choose between pairs of gambles. And really the thrust of these gambles, the two choices, is they chuck out a lot of percentages and prices at you. And the whole hook of it is when you've got other things going on and you're trying to process a lot of quantitative data, it's harder to do that when more things are happening. And what they found is that your decision-making becomes more inconsistent, and you're more prone to take larger risks just because you haven't had time to focus on things. So if you're feeling tired and exhausted, because even though you're sitting at home all day doing nothing, but it still feels like there's just too much going on, it's all right. This one from the Music Network. BMG has opened a songwriter app to artists and labels. And this was the one, the hook of it here is that songwriters will be able to pitch tracks to BMG artists, including upcoming projects for country music superstar Jason Aldean and the fast-rising Spencer Sutherland. So more the hook of it is if you come up with a sick riff but you don't have a band, that you can pitch it to a bunch of career songwriters and they can maybe take your riff, put it in a song, make a lot of money, and I don't know what happens to you. Maybe you get a writing credit, but that would imply some royalties, which I'm pretty sure is not the case. But hey, it could be your chance to crack it in the music industry. Here's one from DigiDay. Fox News' Facebook Live Kids show gets 350,000 viewers per episode. I want to include this one because this shows a bit of a problem that I think happens, especially with the right-wing media. I don't have time to read to them before, she said, but read. Where's the fucking name of this woman? Perino plan for the series to just take place on Monday through Friday at 3:30 p.m. on her personal Facebook account, sandwiched between the two shows she hosts for Fox News at 2 p.m. and 5 p.m., and it was aimed at giving working parents a short break in the day, since at that point most schools began to close. So yeah, I can't get the first name of this woman, but it's a Perino. And yeah, Dana Perino, there we go. So she's a Fox News host, and she was just doing some Facebook Live reading of some storybooks for kids. And it seemed to be going so well on a personal account that Fox has actually picked it up to do on their actual Facebook page. I mention this because I feel like it can also serve as a bit of a form of indoctrination. That when you're a little kid and there was a quarantine going on and you were at home and this nice lady on Facebook was reading storybooks, that as you get older and you see her on the news reading things out, because you're a bit more familiar with her, you're going to pay more attention to what she says. And so then you're going to give more credence to it, and there's more buy-in for you to check out everything else that she produces. And then, yeah, you'll just be super keen to see what else people on Fox News have to say. There seems to be some fuckery going on with my pocket account, so things get a little bit slower here, but I'm still going to try power through anyway. Another quick one from BNT. The return of Australia's coolest chocolate bar, the Polly Waffle, fast-tracked for COVID-19 return. This is perhaps one of the only good things to come out of everything that's going on. A quick bit of context. The Polly Waffle, a chocolate tube full of overly sugary meringue, met an untimely demise when it was discounted back in 2009 due to poor sales, but howls of anger from devotees. Yeah, all the Polly Waffle fans out there are very sad to see that go, I'm sure. I'm sure there's a bunch of people buying them for years who, even now, over 10 years later, feel a massive gulf in their life because they can't find a comparable chocolate bar. It says here that the patent for the Polly Waffle was held by South Australian confectioner Robin Mentz, who has been planning to resurrect it for some time now. But with a cash injection from the federal government designed to boost local manufacturing, Robin Mentz says it will be fast-tracking the Polly Waffle. So this is the one upside of everything that's been going on. That now that the government is putting money into things the way that they always should have been, that you too can now start your own manufacturing empire. As long as you have the patent for a chocolate bar that has a built-in audience of people who remember seeing it on the shelf back in the day. Another quick article from Umbrella. Victorian government launches streaming service to support creative industries during lockdown. And look, when they say streaming service and these things, it's always overstated. That what it is they put things on Facebook Live every now and then. This, in collaboration with Mushroom Group, the new live series Stated Music, will also feature weekly performances from homegrown artists. The first episode will stream on Together Victoria, as well as across Facebook and YouTube, at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday, 3rd of May. See, this is how long it's been since I've done this podcast. But yeah, so Mushroom Music, owned by the Gadinskis, who pretty much stripped all the character out of Australian music to try and follow what was trending globally, are going to let the few select artists that they've given money to over the past 30, 40 years, and will give them the privilege of appearing on a free Facebook Live feed. So at least that's something. We'll do another quick one here. This one's from The Conversation. Say hello to the crazy beast mammal who lived among the dinosaurs. This is it's a big looking mammal thing. Imagine like a giant badger is what that is. The cat-sized animal, is that all it is? Cat-sized animal known as Adalatherium hui, or crazy beast, has features not found in today's mammals, so it could be one of evolution's abandoned experiments in developing new life. To be honest, I haven't read through this, I haven't highlighted anything, so this one can be in the links. But it is apparently a very bizarre animal. It is very strange. Like it says here, there is much about this animal that was so unusual. Features of the skull, the largest number of small holes for nerves and blood vessels in any mammal, and ear bones, small ridges inside the cochlea, have never been found in other mammals. So definitely a bit of an abandoned project by Mother Nature herself. Imagine a bit of like a hunchback cat crossed with a ferret. So look, I'll be honest with you, I can probably see why it didn't work out. All right, what else are we up to here? Oh, yeah, this is a good one. From Mashable. The AI meme generator is better at making memes than humans. So you've probably seen ShitPostBot, which mashes a template up with a source image, but is quite limited to the types of memes it can create. This is the next level. I think this comes from, was it the fellows that know your meme? No, ImageFlip. The place you go to just quickly slap together memes if you don't want to fuck around with Photoshop, that they've gotten a lot of meme templates, like the one here that's been getting around of the ladies screaming at the cat at the table. And the ladies are saying, "You said you'd be a bitch," to which the cat replies, "I said I was a coronavirus." Trust me, it's funny the first time you see it in context. that where this differs from ShitPostBot is this can actually do captions, whereas ShitPostBot, you had to provide the caption and hope that the source image that it paired up with made sense. So what I would really like to see is these two coming together so that we can get the dankest memes that don't make any fucking sense, but are somehow still funny. Here's one from Music Radar. Retro Pong is a free plugin that lets you play the classic 70s video game in your door. So that's a digital audio workstation. But you know when you're doing recording and you know you've sort of laid down your tracks, the bassist who hasn't learnt anything comes in, and you pretty much have to teach them their parts whilst trying to get them to record them with enough consistency to then edit and mix later. Well, here's a very useful plugin for you that you can then just play Pong whilst you're waiting for them to get their shit sorted. There's not much more to it than that. The article is there, which will have a link to it. And otherwise, if you just want to load up Pro Tools to play Pong with your friend, that I'm sure there are other more resource-intensive ways of doing it, but none quite so unique. Ooh. Here's another article, some sad news, sad news from ABC. Coronavirus pandemic forces cancellation of 2020 Logie Awards. Yeah, you know, those are super relevant awards that they give to figures in Australian media. You know, like the same 20 people. That's not happening anymore. So, sorry anyone had to break the bad news to. But yeah, you won't be able to watch the Logies this year. It's going to be delayed till some point. Don't worry, keep an eye out here. This podcast, we're tracking very closely what happens with that, and we will let you know as soon as the Logies are back up and happening again. Here's one from Variety. AMC Theatres won't play Universal movies in wake of Trolls World Tour dispute. So this is, if you remember the whole thing with Trolls World Tour, that... which has somehow become one of the most culturally significant films of the time, is it was slated for a cinematic release, which didn't eventuate because of this virus called COVID-19. You may have heard of it. And so what they did was they went for a streaming on demand option where you would pay $20 per viewing. And you may think that $20 to watch a single film once is a bit rich, but when you'd have to be paying $20 per ticket. Otherwise, it's actually cheaper. And I'm sure a lot of the people complaining are people that don't have kids. Because when you're stuck at home with a bunch of these little shit kids and they want to watch the new movie that's out, I'm sure $20 to shut them up for an hour and a half is worth it. Turns out the Trolls World Tour made a lot of money doing this. And so theatres who can't operate in these times are very unhappy with it. And I feel like it just indicates how unpleasant going to the cinema is just overall. And they're trying to cap that in the knees to stop anyone from trying to pull us the same shit with similar movies whilst we're all in lockdown. Here's another quick one. I pulled this from sci-fi.com, and that's S-Y-F-Y. New species of turtle looks like an alien rock with eyes and only gets weirder. Apparently, this one here is about the Matamata turtles, which have been around for millions of years, and they work in the Orinoco region of the Amazon Basin. Even though the Matamata is universally known, its natural history, conservation status, and biogeographically are largely unexplored. The mystery surrounding the Matamata does not make it sort of alien in a way. These turtles are now thought to have split into two separate species around 13 million years ago. So it was originally thought that there was only one type of Matamata, which lived in the Amazon basin, which has now evolved into a newly discovered species. And yeah, these turtles, you've probably seen around before. They look like a rock. They've got this ugly as fuck spade-shaped head, weird bug eyes, a lot of weird ass shit going on. They're hideous turtles. By the look of their shells, you wouldn't want to step on them, but they'd be very hard to see, even in the best of circumstances. Hard to see and difficult to look at is how you can describe them. But yeah, just some ugly as fuck turtles. Like, shit, Fuck, you wouldn't believe it. All right, from the New Daily again. Target risk of becoming the next coronavirus casualty. So you know that department store chain you're completely indifferent to? Target? They weren't going super good before this whole COVID-19 thing made everything go to shit. And so COVID-19 has not helped. Let's see, we've got some quotes here from people that work there. Mr. Scott, can I pull his title out quickly? Yeah. Wesfarmers Managing Director Rob Scott confirmed the company has launched a strategic review of Target in an effort to preserve profitability. The strategic review is considering all options for the Target business, including an accelerated store closure program, the conversion of some stores to Kmart, and other structural options for the Target business. See, a bit of context of what I know about Target is that because they did such a good job reinvigorating Kmart had started cannibalizing some of Target's sales, so their hope was to try and elevate Target into more of that department store space, akin to David Jones and Meijer. Despite putting absolutely no effort into that, not changing anyone's perception in that area, Target has somehow performed poorly. What they decided to do to try and shape this a bit more is get Guy Russo, who was the guy that changed everyone's perception in Kmart, and put him in place. And what happened after Guy Russo helmed Target is pretty much just the same thing that he did for Kmart, where he just got a bunch of cheap shit from China and packed the shelves out. As nice as that may sound, that was Kmart's whole shtick. So the idea of trying to elevate the status of Target hasn't really come through. Sales have dwindled as they've sat in this awkward middle space. And now this COVID-19 has hit and everything's going to shit. So look, Target, it's one of those places you have no real attachment to it because who gives a fuck? And I would also say that on top of that, like if they all closed down, like would you really miss them? Like if we got more Kmarts out of it, that would be great. And yeah, one of the reasons I particularly don't like Target is their Lego is always more expensive. They'll have a 20% off sale, and that just makes it the same price as everywhere else, including fucking Kmart, which they're both owned by Wesfarmers. Why is the Lego at Target more expensive than Kmart when they're both owned by the same parent company? Okay, moving on. This one, I won't dwell on it too much because it's an interesting read on its own from Rock Paper Shotgun. Who made FY Ice World? A forensic investigation. So this is like one of the most popular third-party Counter-Strike maps. You may have ended up in it at some point yourself. It's the Ice World one where it's just a big square arena with like four squares in the middle forming a bit of a plus-shaped corridor in the center and a few additional barriers on the sides. I remember playing Counter-Strike Source back in the day. You just join a server. Suddenly you have to download a map and you're in this weird square thing that honestly really goes against the whole mechanics and approach of Counter-Strike. But I think the appeal of this one is just its simplicity, and it got around at a time when there wasn't much else going on. And I've got to tell you, this article really goes to depth to try and find out who the actual creator of the map was. Like, trying to jump on whatever old forums existed where these sorts of files were hosted, looking at the properties, trying to figure things out. It's a great piece of investigative gaming journalism. You got your cast of characters, such as a Dutch teenager who goes by R.D. Real Despair, was long claimed to have been the original author of Ice World, but even then, there were debates about that. Seriously, read this now, because it's about to be turned into a 10-part fucking podcast, and then everybody's mother is going to be hooked on this thing, and you can say that you read the original article before Facebook adapts it into a docuseries. Okay, here's another quick one. From Polygon, why is KK Slider the only fully nude animal in Animal Crossing New Horizons? But I quickly checked on Twitter when this was tweeted out, and thankfully everybody beat me to the punch of that wonderful piece of deviant art where it's a muscly KK Slider with his guitar who only has a pair of cut-off jean shorts covering his massive bulge, asking another muscly, I imagine the villager of the island, any requests? To which the villager replies, yeah, lose the shorts. So, of course, he used to wear clothes, and then after a creative request, he doesn't. So this asks a lot of questions. It goes on about how even some of the villagers on your island will acknowledge that he doesn't wear clothes, and seems kind of odd that he doesn't. He'll wear them on album covers and a few other scenarios, but not when he turns up to your island and is expecting to play in front of a bunch of people. It was one of those bit of fun, pointless articles, but I thought I'd list it because we already have the answer. I've had it for the longest time. Again, bleeding cool, but this is a fun bit of something to close this out with. RoboCop won't stay down with new higher toys figure. You remember RoboCop, that great tentpole the sci-fi movie, which really explores what it means to be a man and the extent that organizations are willing to go to get their products placed inside the police force. It doesn't sound exactly like the RoboCop you're thinking of. Oh, well, I was talking about the 2014 RoboCop remake, not the original one from Paul Verhoeven, like, what was it, 1989? No, this is a highly detailed figure of the remake RoboCop, which is probably one of the biggest bummers that could ever happen. But yeah, this isn't the RoboCop that we all know and love. This is that shitty, like, Iron Man, Batman ripoff one, where instead of a bunch of anti-capitalist, swashbuckling and tomfoolery, they're like, what if we got a movie called RoboCop about a half-man, half-machine robotic police officer and try to do some extremely watered-down Blade Runner-style shit? That one. I watched it, and if it wasn't for articles like this about, for some reason, they're still making detailed toys of this 2014 forgettable movie 6 years later, I would have forgotten it ever existed. So I'm sure it's a bit of a bummer to some people that you missed out on what could have been a pretty fucking sick battle damage allegory for Jesus. But no, we are not so lucky. So that's everything I had for this episode. As you can see, so we're almost clocking in an hour. So I'll leave it there, but I'll part this with saying, come check out the newsletter. I've actually been staying on top of that because it's easier for me to sit there and type for an hour and talk for an hour. So that one's been maintained a bit more vigorously. And going on about all the games I've been playing and movies I've been watching during this lockdown. And when I do publish something on the blog or the website, that I drop it in there as well. So that'll do it for this episode, and I will hopefully see you next week, as long as I get on top of things.